Hello! Welcome to episode 4 of What We've Watched. Got the title right this week. My name is Chris.
This is Emmett. How's it going?
And
you can't talk back to me, sorry.
Yeah. Hello, listeners.
Leave a comment. Let me know how you're doing.
Yeah. Tell us.
Right at this moment.
Yeah. We'll do this live so they can just tweet us and we'll respond. A live show one day when we have many fans.
No, like whenever they're listening to it. Just leave a comment at that moment. How they are at that moment.
Yeah, 2 weeks from now.
All right, so what are we doing?
This week, we're going to talk about movie Angel Heart.
Angel Heart, yep. So this is interesting because this is our first foray outside of the 21st century.
Oh, I guess it is. Yeah.
So Angel Heart was released in March 1987. So, going back a bit.
Yeah. I mean, not an old movie, but older from the stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah. We've been doing, like, 2000s kind of stuff. So, so Angel Heart was based on a novel called Falling Angel, released in 1978 by William Hertzberg. Not sure about the pronunciation there. But the screenplay was written and the movie directed by Alan Parker. He's best known for, like, Midnight Express, Fame, Evita. My main exposure to him was, like, the Pink Floyd, The Wall, the movie of
I was going to say, of those, I've only seen Midnight Express. I haven't seen Fame or Evita, but I've seen Pink Floyd, The Wall, so.
Yeah.
Well, it was a long time ago, but.
Yeah, so that's what I'm mainly known from. Okay. And, I mean, he's done lots of other stuff. I mean, like, most of the stuff that he's directed, you probably would recognize the title.
Yeah.
Most people would, you know, movie buffs anyway, would definitely see the titles and be like, oh, I've heard of that movie. So, you know, he's
pretty... his name didn't mean anything to me when I saw it.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty nondescript name.
Yeah, so I was like, I wonder... So I looked it up, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I might have seen Fame. I can't recall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of well known. You know, it spawned a famous TV show, and, you know, it was...
Same with Evita, I've heard of Evita,
All right, so, Angel Heart is, I guess, sort of like a noir kind of horror thriller type thing.
Period piece. Takes place in 1955.
55, yeah. So it's kind of got a little bit of, like, the detective kind of thing in it, but it's, you know, also has spooky, gory kind of stuff, so... That's sort of the kind of movie it is.
Yeah. Something we haven't actually done on any of the previous casts. This is something that, going back and listening, cropped up to me. We never actually say what the movie's about when we talk about the movies. We never, like, start with what the movie is about.
Yeah.
And for people who haven't seen the movie, it's a, like Emmett said, a crime/horror thriller... about a private detective who gets hired by a questionably odd fellow to find out about someone who owes him a debt. And it starts out kind of normal, but it gets weird kind of quickly. But yeah, it's basically a detective story.
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of is a little bit of a throwback to the sort of noir fiction, like, Raymond Chandler kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, lots of where he's going around trying to find out the information, and then there's just, like, the bodies are just piling up, you know, he's just like a corpse magnet, and there's, you know, but...
Lots of cigarettes get smoked.
Yeah. But it's, there's sort of a twist that's a kind of a supernatural, crazy kind of...
Which I think, this movie has a big plot twist in it, and it's very near the end, and I think normally we go into spoiler realm here. I think we should really avoid the spoiler for this one. I think it's something we can completely talk about the movie without spoiling the ending.
I feel like it's not for people that have seen a lot of movies and stuff like that. I feel like it's something that's probably not that much of a surprise in the sense that
I didn't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Laura did.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that's kind of like, it's what they do, you know?
Yeah.
It's that type of thing it's not the only kind of time where they've done that sort of thing.
No.
But anyways, it's fine. That's sort of interesting.
It's just because I think if you know that last...
Yeah.
Like, well, 10 minutes of the... If you know the last 10 minutes of the movie, it would definitely change how you view the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were to watch the movie, yeah. you know how it
well,
ends.
I agree. It's just been so long since I had...
Yeah.
I've never... It's been so long since I was in that state where I had never seen it before.
Yeah. And this was my first viewing.
And this was Chris's first viewing, so that's why we have, like, a very different perspective maybe on that. So the first thing that kind of stood out for me or that I saw was the very, very beginning shot, pretty much.
It's all shot in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, but it's got, like, the thing with, like, the kitty and the dog. And then and then this, like, dead body.
Yeah.
And it,
which has nothing to do with the story. Just, here's an alley with a dead body. We're just setting it up. Like,
well,
it's a noir film.
I mean, I can see it as what it could be referencing. And, like, I just don't know if that's what it was intended to reference. I think it's just kind of... it's one of those things that you can sort of see it in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's more establishing the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
But I mean, like, if I mean, I certainly have my own theories as to, like,
oh,
what
it was. Oh, like,
it
has
it was.
Deeper meaning than just being a dead body in an alley.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about why the kitty's there, but, you know.
Well, it's just sort of, you know.
You can never go wrong putting more kitties.
I mean, it's an older lady. It looks like maybe she fell off a balcony.
Putting more
maybe it was her cat.
Putting more kitties in a movie is never a bad thing.
Cat tax.
Unless it's about, like, evil killer kitties. So, yeah, I mean, like you say, this... we should probably say, actually, so the star is Mickey Rourke.
Good-looking Mickey Rourke.
So this is... Well, yeah, this
not,
is
not
the 80s.
Not freaky, ugly, modern-day Mickey Rourke.
Well, you know.
Mickey Rourke.
let's be, you know, charitable. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is the 80s, obviously, so this is kind of when... he was sort of at his peak time, or, you know, roundabouts there.
Yeah.
It was sort of mid-80s was kind of... So then, as Chris says, you know, he meets this kind of mysterious guy who wants to hire him, and that's played by Robert De Niro. So that's sort of a different kind of thing. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that De Niro's performance in this was kind of interesting, because it's really... like, it's kind of weird... But it's, like, really reserved for most
of it.
Yes,
he's very understated.
Until the end.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, like, you know, he doesn't really say a lot, and what he does say, it's not so much, I wouldn't describe it as, like, when people watch movies and they see, you know, people that are known as good actors or whatever, and they're just kind of like, oh, they're not really trying, they're phoning it in or whatever. I wouldn't really describe it that way, but it's definitely a very reserved performance for what you would expect from Robert De Niro. Like, I see it as more like an intentional choice.
Yeah. Well, the character he's playing is very, like, very, for the most part, calm, collected, very, he speaks with purpose. He doesn't, like, waste a bunch of time talking.
Yeah.
So
I liked the thing where they talk about, because the main character, the private investigator, Mickey Rourke's character, is Harry Angel.
Yeah.
You know, obviously where the name comes from. But I liked that the first thing... Okay, well, the first thing I wanted to say is that I love how when he has conversations with people that he's at a social disadvantage with, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people that seem on a higher social level or that have some sort of...
you know, they got money or power.
Yeah, they're, like, the most awkward conversations.
Yeah.
Like, he has this really weird... It's a really interesting thing on Rourke's, like, decision as a performance, or, you know, maybe it was directed that way. But he's, like, super, super awkward and just kind of, like, stumbling over himself and just kind of...
He's not your...
But then he's not like that when he's in situations with people that either he's has the advantage over or that are, like, clearly kind of socially on the same level or less than him.
Well, because, usually in these, like, private dick movies, like, the main character is... He's cool and suave, and it allows him to...
Yeah, or, like, irreverent, or...
Yeah, he allows him to get by in situations where he's at a disadvantage, and then allows him to, like, really shine in situations where, like, they're the strong personality.
So I thought it was a really interesting character thing that he was just, like, super awkward and just, like, almost sort of didn't know how to talk to people like this.
I think it fits in with a chunk of the film, though, because around, probably even before, by the end of the first sort of, I guess, act... The character already starts to feel he's a little out of his depth.
Oh, yeah.
And...
Well, I mean, he makes that clear really, right from the start.
Yeah, and I think that really... You know, it's clearly not just
he's
missing person.
He's not that
face.
Sort of superhero kind of detective where he's, like, always...
He's not Mike Hammer.
He's always on it. He's always, like, has confidence and always...
He doesn't have, like, a witty comeback for every time somebody says something. Yeah. No, he's...
So I loved the bit where he's sort of saying that, like, oh, why did you... How did you choose me? Were you just looking through the phone book? Because a lot of times... He explains that a lot of jobs he gets because people just look through a phone book and they're lazy, and his name's Angel.
Angel, yeah.
So they just kind of, you know, it's like the first private detective that they find in the phone book type of thing is why he gets hired, right? So, again, that's kind of like that sort of, not self-deprecating exactly, but, like, he doesn't necessarily have, like, a high opinion of himself. You know, he even explains about how, like, he never kind of handles big jobs, you know, it's always, like, just kind of really minor stuff. Because he just doesn't seem to have, like, a lot of confidence. So, again,
I think he says, like, thefts and cheating.
Very sort of contrary to, like, the typical kind of confident sort of detective type of character. So that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, in other ways, he's very much like the typical thing. He's got clothes are looking a little worn, and he's kind of rough around the edges.
He's shabby.
He's shabby. He's, like, you know, smokes a lot, and... You know, he sort of has the way he talks and stuff, you know. So it's a really interesting mix of different sort of attributes that are...
Yeah, and a lot of scenes he has a... There's a little bit of sort of a, I don't want to say happiness, but there's a little bit of mirth to his character that you don't see in a lot of films of this type.
Yeah.
Like, specifically, like, there's a scene where he talks to, like, when he's looking for the guy, he talks to this, like, carny from,
The Coney Island.
The Coney Island carny out on the beach.
Yeah, that was
and
great.
And it's like a really like a lot of like smiling, a lot of laughter.
Yeah.
And well, seeing when he meets later on he meets this girl and he's clearly he's almost like clumsily giddy, which is something you never see in this kind
absolutely,
of film.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, exactly. And that's sort of what I was saying, is that he's a little bit more kind of
normal
person. Like he's got this sort of very sort of human aspect that's kind of merged with all this other stuff. It's a pretty complex character in a lot of ways, and you know, I think that's largely down to
from that character that he talks to on Coney Island. He gets his nose shield. You put it on your glass. You tuck it into your sunglasses to protect your nose from getting sunburned.
It's
an old, like, 40s and 50s.
Oh, yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah, well,
he wears it
those.
Throughout the movie.
Well, we'll get into it, but, I mean, he goes down to New Orleans, right?
Yeah, so it's
hot
and it's,
weather. It's, like, obviously probably, like,
I have know, a, that's actually the something. Only thing I have an issue with is the bit where he goes down to New Orleans. But it makes him look very comical. It's almost like he's wearing a fake nose, which, in retrospect, like, in the time period, it makes sense. But they never show anybody else but him wearing these after this nose guard after that point.
Mm.
And it just kind of looks...
It's just an affectation.
Yeah,
he decides to take that on as something that...
But
I mean, it makes sense with the whole, like, because he's from New York and they contrast because, like, the New York stuff is all kind of rainy and dreary.
Yeah.
And stuff. So when he goes down to New Orleans, it's like...
It's actually even beyond that. And this is actually the only thing that bothered me. When he's in New York, the scenes before he goes down to New Orleans, there is clearly snow on the ground. Then he goes down to New Orleans, and it's the middle of summer. I'm pretty sure it's not that hot in New Orleans when it's wintertime in New York.
Probably not, but I mean, I don't really know enough about it. Like, that's not really something I thought research.
Like, I thought about it, and I'm like, well, there's also a nebulous amount of time passing in this show, too. Like... In this movie, like, you're not sure if it's, like, because he periodically has
but
to
But I don't
Robert
remember seeing, like, where was there snow other than, like...
When he gets out of the car, when he goes, he visits a old doctor that looked after this, the guy he's looking for. He was his patient.
Okay, yeah.
When
they
steps
go
out of the car, he's trudging through, like, slushy snow.
Okay, I do remember that, actually.
Which, I mean, I guess in New York, it could place it, like, March or April.
Yeah,
which,
I was going to say, because even...
Because he takes the train to New York, or to Louisiana, or the New Orleans, sorry.
Yeah,
and
that's Louisiana.
When he gets off the train, he's, like, super sweaty. He's, like, pitted out his shirt.
I mean, yeah.
But that could be right. That could be right.
I mean, I would think that probably because I know in certain places, like, that wintry kind of, because it could be kind of the tail end
of that
wintry
kind
of thing,
right.
In New York. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's within the realm of possibility.
Well, that's what I mean,
but
at that point, I was starting to get confused. Not confused, but I started to become wondering what the time passage on this is. Like,
it didn't seem like a lot.
It didn't seem like a long time, but then I wasn't sure, like, are they just not showing that it's, like, he's looking for somebody for days? Or, you know, but it's, the time passage is neither here nor there as far as the story goes, so.
All right, so, just going back a little bit, I really like when he has the initial meeting with De Niro's character.
Okay, I just sort of looked it up. In, like, March in New Orleans, it can be between, like, 50 and 70. So that would be a huge difference from New York.
Yeah.
Even if it wouldn't be it's that
probably more like
hot, it would be hot to him. So that makes sense. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I take it all back.
whatever.
Anyway, so, yeah, sorry, early on.
Well, just the meeting that he has with Louis Cipher, the De Niro character. The
cleverly named Louis Cipher.
I liked one of the things I really liked was the way that the lawyer, Cipher's lawyer there.
Oh, who's he? That's his initial contact. Yeah.
The way that Cipher and the lawyer go back and forth with their talking, and sometimes even the same sentence.
Yeah.
Like they'll start and finish sentences. They always kind of sort of go back and forth and sort of they start, one will start saying something and then the other one will finish it or will say the next kind of thought in the conversation. It adds this really interesting element. I mean, it was like really, it was really interesting the way that they chose to do that, but also it just adds this interesting element to making it like a three-way conversation, but not really. It's really more like a two-way conversation where half of the conversation is like this weird kind of combination of two people.
It makes the lawyer also seem much more like just like a puppet of Louis Cipher's character versus like being like, I'm the lawyer in charge. This is my client. It's more like the client is in charge.
Well,
and
but
the lawyer is just there because
like
somebody had to be an intermediary.
But I mean, that's the way it would normally be anyway. But I mean, I've never seen really that type of thing exactly in another thing. So, another thing I had sort of to mention was the whole sort of plastic surgery kind of theme, because there's all this stuff where, because he's being hired to find this singer who was injured.
Johnny Favorite,
who was like injured and then, you know, he's taken away and he's supposedly like...
It was like he was injured in the war.
Yeah, he's given like a new identity and stuff, right? So there's a couple of times when they mention a few things where it kind of just implies, you know, like, oh, at one point they say like, oh, you know, he got a new face and stuff like this. And I thought it was really interesting because obviously Mickey Rourke is kind of known for... the plastic surgery because of the reconstructive surgery after he went back to boxing in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And before that as well, he did that movie Johnny Handsome, which was another like plastic surgery theme thing where he was like a criminal that had a disfigured face that gets plastic surgery that, you know, turns him into,
that's a good movie,
you know, Mickey Rourke in the 80s. So I thought that was just a very odd kind of life art life kind of where he did like these couple of movies right around the same time that have sort of these plastic surgery themes. And then later ended up kind of, you know, being kind of identified with that in real life.
Accidentally life imitates art there.
Yeah. But it's just an odd, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't really normally talk about things that involving, you know, the actors' real lives, but I just find that really odd. Another interesting thing was back to the character. I guess a lot of the stuff I have to say about are about that his character, because that's just kind of the most interesting thing about the movie in many ways. And another really interesting thing is how he has this weird thing where he's like mispronounces words a lot, like in very strange ways. And one of the things
well, he started off with him mispronouncing Louis Cipher's name.
Yeah, Cipher. Yeah.
We think it's foreign right away. Yeah.
But he calls him Cipher in when they're having the interview, and then later and he gets corrected and they're just like, no, it's Cipher. But then later when he's listening back to the tape recording that he's making of all the information
notes
that he's gathered so far. And he says it again. He mispronounces the name again, the Cipher. He says Cipher again. And there's just a odd, you know, like hospice.
Oh, it yeah, it's hospice.
Is hospice. Yeah. And just like odd little things like that just peppered throughout his dialogue.
I
mean, yes, he has an accent. He has the sort of like, you know, New York, like Brooklyn kind of, he has the Brooklyn accent. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like words that are just completely mispronounced in odd ways that you wouldn't expect.
I think that may be just either accidental and they left it in.
Or, oh, definitely not accidental.
Yeah, or like deliberate just to show that like, you know, he's not.
I think it was just an extra sort of character quirk.
Because
they just I think they just put a lot of work into this character and really.
Yeah, and I.
Because you're with him every moment of the movie. It never leaves that character.
This movie is told in, I mean, I don't know what they call that, like first person, not first person. Like, you're never not with this character.
Yeah, like he's literally. Yeah.
Which is another. Like noir.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes, like in those.
Very rarely in like.
In
noir
like Raymond Chandler books and stuff like that, you're always with.
You're always with.
With the detective. Yeah. But, in movies.
Doesn't happen very often.
Not to this degree. Yeah. Like, you never see anything, as far as I can recall.
That he doesn't
except
see.
For maybe that very opening scene, which, like I say, is still up for interpretation.
The credits are going on, so who knows what
But
that,
aside from that, as far as I can recall, you never see anything that isn't directly his experience.
Yeah.
So.
Well, his sort of character quirks and stuff actually goes even beyond him, like, everybody in this movie that is, like, somebody that you meet that's, like, I guess you could say, like, a named character of importance in this movie is a, like, quote-unquote, they are a character. They're very, everybody has, like, kind of a little bit, I don't say larger-than-life personality, but they're a little bigger, like Louis Cipher, the lawyer. There's this.
Well, I think that's
not a priest, but this black preacher because he's in Harlem.
Yeah,
there's this black preacher who's just like way over the top, like but in a very like interesting way.
But that's a particular style of those types of churches.
But it fits in very much with the rest of the movie. You meet these two cops in New Orleans, and they are just. Complete caricature.
But I think that's...
And it's all great. It's all great. Again, it's a noir-y
It's thing. Great, but it's very much a noir thing. I mean, directly...
It's been a long time since I've seen a good... I mean, movies like this don't get made anymore.
No, and that's why...
It's a shame.
And that's why, that's something where when we were first discussing doing this movie, and that's one of the things is that it's partly because it is like a period piece and stuff... And it's an homage to a specific kind of era and type of fiction. It's not sort of as dated. It's not super dated in the sense of, like, when you watch a lot of 80s movies and they're in the 80s and it's all like, oh look, the 80s fashions and the 80s hair and the 80s music and, like, the sort of, I think that I mentioned, like, you know, the Valley Girl type of thing where it's that, you know, or whatever, right? Those sort of stereotypical kind of 80s settings. It's not dated in that way, but in another sort of way, like the kind of movie that it is a very particular to that time, like that those kinds of movies were being made. And like you say, they don't really get made anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, the movie is actually very like the style that the movie's filmed in actually feels older than the movie is. Like it's an 80s movie in... Like, you know, in just sort of, like, the film quality of it. Like, you can tell it's an 80s movie. But, like, sort of the style, it feels a little bit older. It almost feels like a 50s or kind of
Yeah,
movie,
well, I mean, yeah, know? Because it's based on that style.
Yeah,
But, I mean, it just...
It almost feels like it was filmed
coming
when it
from
took
a
place, except for the fact that it clearly it's...
Coming from a time...
You know, better quality than that.
Like... That sort of late 80s, early 90s kind of time is like, that's sort of the time where I probably the movies that, like the, where I've seen the most movies from that era.
Yeah.
You know, like that's probably the era that I have the best sort of coverage in as far as the movies that I've seen. And it's just one of those things that it's very, those kinds of movies were the stuff that were getting made back then that you just don't really see anymore.
Yeah.
To a large degree. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but.
Yeah.
It's just not really the same. Another interesting thing is the New Orleans aspect is not Because I, you know, I obviously looked it up and everything, and the New Orleans stuff is actually not part of the book. So apparently, from what I've...
Wow, that means the book must be very different.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. It, apparently, it's very, very close.
Oh.
But it just never moves location to New Orleans. So, like, everything is in the New York setting.
Oh, okay.
But it's very, very close, yeah, story-wise.
Well, it was all filmed in New York, so they never actually went to New Orleans to do any filming. So, I guess...
I could believe that.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering how much... This was filmed on location and stuff. And then, like, as I watched the credits, because actually there's sort of some stuff that happens, sort of happens during the credits. I just watched all the credits, and at the end it's got the, you know, thanks for the film. And it's, like, all locations filmed in New York. And I was like, oh, they faked...
That doesn't really surprise me.
Like, it looked like the, you know, New Orleans...
Well, when you're doing a period piece, especially... When you're doing a period piece, especially, like, you want to control...
Yeah.
The environment, so it's like you're gonna look for stuff that gives you the look that you need for the story more so than, you know.
I mean, they definitely, like, the shots are all very tight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was not one of those, like, for example, like last week or
28
days later, they have huge sweeping empty shots of streets and stuff like that. Like, this is, the shots are all, again, because you're with your character all the time with Angel all the time. The camera's almost like behind him everywhere.
Yeah.
You never see big, huge, which I guess made it, as a period piece, makes it easier to do.
Right. And I think definitely it also fits with the noir style, because that's kind of, those tend to be like the movies, the actual, like, genuine movies from like the 40s and early 50s and stuff. They tend to be more sort of closed down like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're not getting, like, big shots of, like, landscapes and stuff.
No,
like,
no.
They're talking. It's people in a room talking.
A lot of talking head shots.
A lot of close-ups and stuff like that.
Tight, atmospheric.
Yeah, much more, like, tight shots. So, I mean, I think that, again, just kind of followed on with the style.
Mm-hmm. The music. The music, too. The music in this was great.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I was actually, that's one of my least favorite aspects of it.
Oh, really? Like,
I didn't think it was very interesting.
It was
coming from a director who's known for dealing with, like, music so much, because Alan Parker did musicals, and he did, like, the Pink Floyd movie, and he did, like, all this, you know, I thought that the music was kind of underwhelming. Like,
I mean, thought it was good.
Simple is not always bad.
Maybe great is overblowing it.
It's cool. But it's an opinion.
Because it ranges between, like... Like, this is the music that is happening in the scene because there's a band, or it just sort of, like, this is what you would expect, to being very, and this is, again, I'm not trying to spoil it, if I'd known and I'm paying attention to the scenes that have, some of the music is very weird. Mm-hmm. It's very, like, just strange.
Definitely agree with that.
It's more like just musical noise and sound than actually kind of like a musical song.
Yeah.
And that is probably a giveaway in retrospect, if I had known, you know, how this movie ends.
Yeah.
Like, when the movie is weird, does that mean something weird is going on that you're not really noticing? And I kind of wish I had gone back and had an opportunity.
I would say that yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely the case.
Yeah, okay. So I didn't just imagine that. Okay.
Yeah, but I just found it to be, like, simple is not always bad. But I found it to be, like, too simple. Like, it felt, like, minimalist to the point of just kind of, like, well, a lot of times it was just like, well, why even have it there?
Yeah. I mean, this actually,
like,
movie had,
like,
something...
some of the stuff that was almost entirely just, like, a little, like, slow little piano thing.
Yeah.
That was just kind of like, okay, that's barely even there.
There was a lot of scenes in this movie that had no music that are the kind of things, like, and I guess maybe this is just a modern movie thing where, like, modern day movies consistently have music that are like,
I'm glad,
this is how you should be feeling right now.
Yeah.
And this movie had scenes where I directly noticed there is no music in this scene. That in itself was a bit strange.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they didn't sort of overdo it and have kind of like big, sort of like loud, because it really is about like the atmosphere and the what the characters are saying to each other and things like that. So I mean, I'm glad that it didn't kind of go too far with it, but at the same time, I just thought there just wasn't really much there. Like, I was disappointed with the music.
Yeah. I think
but it's interesting that you liked it. I mean,
understated
I find that really
music is like your understated soundtrack and that is a noir movie. Noir movies often have a very understated soundtrack. They usually don't have
sometimes.
A lot of outside of like the very dramatic elements. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is the dramatic scene. Especially, you know, towards the endings, you don't usually have too much.
No, I mean, it's not King Kong or anything,
yeah,
but it's
yeah.
it's. But still, like I don't know. I would have expected a little more, but
yeah.
especially coming from
that's
Alan Parker
as a
director,
a
being
point, yeah.
such like a musically inclined director. So, I think what maybe I mean, do you have anything else really? I think what we maybe could do is just kind of. Do a little bit of spoiler stuff at the end.
Sure.
That for anybody who maybe has seen it but hasn't seen it in a while, or you know, doesn't care, because
but,
kind of have some things to say about it that
okay.
I can't really say without
talking
about
fine.
The ending
yeah.
somewhat.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, if we just sort of give a warning that like, okay,
sure.
after this point,
yeah.
you know, you can not listen to this until after you've seen it.
Yeah. Okay, go watch the movie. It's good. Go watch it.
Yeah, or...
We'll be here. We'll wait for
but
you.
But I mean, but...
When you come back,
yeah.
we'll be still here.
But before you do that, before we do that,
yeah.
do you have anything else to say
yeah,
that's non-spoilery
stuff?
Yeah,
a couple other things. Yeah. There was some very interesting scene cut stuff in this movie. Again, this probably played into the spoiler things, but like we were saying, the camera stays with your character almost all times.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few times where certain things are going on where, and this is actually one of the few times the music actually gets very intense, is the camera will cut away to something else. Like, at one scene, now for the life of me, I can't remember what actually is going on with the main character, but it rapidly cuts back and forth to some kids in New Orleans tap dancing
yeah.
On like a boardwalk in the rain.
Yep.
And it's like a tight zoom in on their shoes tap dancing, but for like a 2 second cut, then it cuts back to him, and then 5 or 6 seconds later it cuts back to the shoes and then back to him. And they do this a couple of things throughout the movie, and they're very, very, the movie is, being that it's a noir movie, it's a lot of talking. There's not a lot of action. There's a little bit, but not a lot of, like, there's no car chases or any of that kind
yeah,
of,
no.
the violence is very,
Momentary,
just very, like, sudden, abrupt, and over.
I mean, they certainly don't hold back, but it's momentary.
It has some of the worst, or actually, I could say worst, has some very 80s Foley. Foley is folly in the action scenes. The punching sounds are clearly like these hilarious, like over.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean,
and
I think that might be yeah. part of the style of
yeah.
Following that
yeah.
noir kind
yeah.
of style
yeah.
where that's the way it probably
yeah.
would have been.
When a guy hits a guy, it's got that good meaty hit sound.
Yeah, I mean, that's. They probably.
But the cuts thing really, it wakes you up. If you were starting to, like, drift away and going, what are we? What is it? What is going on here? Suddenly you're like, oh,
yeah.
whoa, something important is happening.
It gets really intense
yeah,
on
yeah.
those moments.
And it does very much.
It cuts back and forth and the music kind of swells and it gets like super, super intense
mm-hmm.
when the rest of it is kind of very, you know, measured
yeah.
and very kind of slower. So
is it a spoiler to talk about the chickens? And his hatred of,
yeah.
or he's very uncomfortable around
uncomfortable
chickens.
Chickens. Well, I think, again, that's one of those kind of little character quirks that just
yeah.
adds for more rounded. Like I say, I mean, we keep going back to the character, but
yeah.
that's what
it's a very
character-driven
movie. It's all about the main
It's character-driven, but it's especially just character-driven of just his character. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, it really is a testament, I think, to Mickey Rourke as an actor,
yeah.
like, that you watch something like this, and it's completely driven by him.
Oh yeah,
his character, his performance. Like
Harry Angel has a bad day. Could have been the
alternative people who are not
movie.
Familiar with sort of 80s Mickey Rourke. Like this is why. Like everyone was like, this guy's going to be huge.
Yeah,
you know, and it didn't really pan out.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's had a bit of a resurgence in recent years as a more of a character actor.
Yeah,
and
which is
but
yeah,
it's. It's interesting to look back at the 80s Mickey Rourke and see just like, wow, he was
yeah.
amazing.
Oh, yeah. Many
you know,
good things.
Not that he's not a good actor now,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it's just different, you know, because his choices of what he can kind of do now is a bit limited, you know.
Also, big reoccurring thing in this movie, shots of fans.
Yeah.
Like, not like sports fans, but like air fans. Like,
yeah.
Like, a lot of, like, in-window
fans
shots of fans.
Fans are creepy.
Fans in the ceiling, like, turning at like, either, like, fast or slow. Often it kind of just, like, rotating it at this, like, kind of uncomfortable pace with some shadowing, and they keep doing it throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Again, it's one of those things, if
fans
I watch
are
it again, when they show the fans, probably means, much like the weird music, probably really means something.
It might, but I think a lot of times it's just because fans are creepy.
Yeah, well, they started off with the first time they cut to the fan is when he meets Lewis Cipher, and there's a fan on the ceiling, and the fan that is facing him is not blowing properly, and it's just kind of plodding along. And they keep cutting to these door fans, and specifically this one shot of like a building, like an apartment building, with this one window, and it's like red, and it's got this like, you know, fan for blowing the air, like old, like 1955 air conditioner. And it's just, the fan is just slowly turning. They keep cutting to it. And I mean, it's just one of those things, like, I don't know if it was just to build atmosphere or if there was real any big meaning behind it that I just didn't quite pick up on. But yeah, fans can be creepy. Yeah. Like,
fans
especially
are,
those kind
fans
of
fans are really creepy.
Those
and
really, like,
I mean, that's, it's nothing new.
Heavy fans.
It's nothing too new to use them in a creepy way in a movie.
Yeah. We get that woof, woof,
yeah,
woof,
I mean, it's just one of those, it's like, look at something like Apocalypse Now, the opening of Apocalypse Now, equating the ceiling fan to the helicopter blades
in
Vietnam and all that kind of stuff. Like, fans are creepy. I'm gonna go on record right here and just say fans are creepy, so.
Question.
They're a necessary evil.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a fan.
He gets hot.
But.
Especially in New Orleans.
Yeah.
The two guys with the dog.
Yeah.
I never quite understood where they, who, like, did they work for somebody?
Yeah, they worked for, the like, rich, like, New Orleans guy, the father
the
of...
The father of the voodoo
fortune
lady.
Teller.
Or the fortune teller, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Who is played by, a lot of people in this movie are people you recognize. They're just their younger 80s version. I was like, oh, I recognized her. I recognized one of the cops.
So do I, but...
It's with the guy with the mustache.
Yeah.
I did a bad job. I should have looked up some actors' names before looking into this.
Well, what did you think of Lisa Bonet in this?
Because
her involvement in this was quite controversial at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because obviously she's known for like the Cosby Show.
Yeah.
And
I had
kind of, which was,
I saw her
ironically considering what's going on with Bill Cosby now.
Yeah,
but
hilarious.
But I mean, at the time, you know, that it's like it was a very wholesome family sitcom kind of thing. And here she is doing this kind of messed up, you know, movie with gore and nudity
and all so kinds much of, nudity
and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. That it was actually,
I had forgotten like who Lisa Bonet was.
Yeah.
Like, I saw the name and I was like, Lisa Bonet, that name is super familiar.
Yeah.
Huh. And then like watch the whole movie. And at the end credits, it was like, her name, Proudfoot.
Epiphany
Proudfoot. And then Epiphany Proudfoot, Lisa Bonet. I was like, that's who Lisa Bonet is.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cause I recognized the actress. I just did not have a name to go with the face.
Yeah. No, it was it was a really controversial thing at the time.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I mean, she was, like, 19.
Yeah.
And
she did
Mickey Rourke's, like, 35. So, again, the whole kind of, you know, it was
this is one of those movies where, like,
for a lot of reasons,
like,
it was kind of controversial.
Everybody did a great job of the roles they played. Like, nobody, nobody phoned it in. Even the understated, like, Robert De Niro's character.
Yeah.
I almost called him Richard De Niro for some reason. Robert De Niro as his brother.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've seen,
like,
movies.
Everybody acted their asses off.
I've seen movies where Robert De Niro seems to be phoning it in, like, where he's just, like, not really trying. And I didn't get that vibe.
He's done in the last decade.
Well, yeah. But I didn't get that vibe here. Like, it felt like a conscious choice to underplay it a little bit compared to what he normally would.
The dog guys were from the rich guy.
The father,
yeah. Yeah, who he boils and... Don't have the jambalaya. The jambalaya has gone
gumbo,
bad.
The gumbo.
Oh, the gumbo, right.
Yeah.
The gumbo
I love how when he's showing them the gumbo, and he's just like, oh, this is our gumbo. It's gumbo, gumbo. And then, like, Harry just, like, picks up that whole crab and just looks at it and just throws it
in. Because Harry can't have the gumbo. He's got acid stomach. Yeah. Can't enjoy the gumbo, it would kill him.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're good, then we can go to some spoilers.
The only thing, that sex scene?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Almost seemed too much for this movie. This movie's got a lot of stuff.
Well, it was like the tap dancing kids thing. It was
it's where things are accelerating
and building in the intensity, building the intensity.
There's a scene where I don't see the voodoo people. I guess they're whatever that.
Well, that's what they are.
Yeah, they're doing their dancing. They're having like a celebration around a fire night, and he's watching in on them because he's sort of watching her.
Yeah.
And following her because she has a connection to Johnny Favorite.
Yeah.
Lisa Bonet's character, and
because her mother knew Johnny her mother was had a relationship.
Well, that's how she ended up finding her that scene also. Like that very super intense, they sacrifice a chicken and there's blood and crazy dancing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
at certain moments throughout.
That actually happened. The sex scene was like this weird, like hallucinate. Like, the sex part happened, but the rest of it, there's like blood coming from the ceiling. It's like some weird, like, horror thing going on.
But there are those.
It's Evil Dead almost.
There are a number of moments throughout it where you see, like, that he is. Hallucinating
balls.
Or like having certain experiences in his mind that are and it's not really made clear exactly what's sort of going on. Like if he's sort of having memories or if he's kind of crazy or if he's been affected by some outside force.
Yeah.
It's not really clear throughout the movie, but he definitely starts to kind of see things and
come a little unraveled. I mean, the stress of the entire situation. Everybody he goes and talks to ends up dead.
Yeah, almost which is a very classic kind of noir thing. Yeah, like it's very,
but like gruesome dead.
It's very like, it's very sort of Raymond Chandler esque. Like, because it was always Philip Marlowe. It was always like he'd go to talk to somebody, and then the next thing you know, they're dead.
Yeah,
and then you go to talk to somebody else. The next thing you know, they're dead. And it's just that thing of like. It's not my fault. It's not me. I'm not doing it. Like, I just go talk to them and they end up dead.
It's gruesome deaths, too. Like, he goes and talks to this guitar player from the band that Johnny Favorite used to be in.
Yeah.
And later that guy turns up dead with, like, his junk cut out and choked. It's stuffed in his mouth and he chokes on it. The fortune teller ends up dead. Her heart gets cut out.
Yeah.
It's brutal, gruesome death.
But I mean, I guess it's sort
it's
of
where
a bit
the
of
movie
that
starts
of,
to make the turn for to, towards a little more horror than
So I mean, I think probably that's
we'd start putting the spoiler
good place to go to spoilers.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, or you haven't seen it in a long time, or you just care about that sort of thing, because I definitely would urge people the first time they've seen it to sort of not know everything. But
we've probably said too much already.
but I mean that's normal.
Yeah,
discussing it. I mean, you can't discuss it otherwise. So I definitely check it out. And if you don't care about spoilers or if you have seen it before, I mean, I would definitely encourage just watch it now and then sort of come back and listen we definitely would be interested in what people have to say about it after having seen it. So this is your spoiler warning.
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna go on to that. So obviously, it ends up that Harry Angel, it ends up that he is Johnny Favorite.
Well, yeah, because basically what it is
well, he's like a dark
Johnny Favorite owes Lucifer his soul. Because Lucifer is Lucifer. I didn't pick up on that the entire goddamn movie.
Well, that's good, because it's one of those things that is there where...
I mean, the thing is I knew Robert De Niro was playing the devil.
Yeah.
That was, like, immediately obvious.
But the joke of his name is...
I did... What actually threw me is his initial mispronunciation.
Yeah.
I got so...
But that's good. Like,
messed up by that.
But that's good. Like, I like that, because it's like you're not constantly just thinking about
and
that.
And what had happened is he had... Is
Johnny well, he helped him out with his...
Career.
So he basically made him a success by... you know, selling his soul to the devil.
And then he went away to the war.
Yeah. Well, that was later. So first, like, what happens is...
he had a big singing career.
Yeah, so what it was basically he sold his soul in order to become a successful singer.
Yeah.
But he was also into, like, black magic,
right? That's right.
So,
What did Epiphany said, her mom said Johnny Favorite was the most evil man she had ever known.
It was the closest that to true evil.
That's right.
That she would want to, you know, to get, I think is what it was. It was, yeah. Being with him was the, you know, getting the closest to true evil that she would ever want to get.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, he basically intentionally sort of conjured up the devil, essentially, to make the deal. And then what happened was that it was to try to get out of, to basically try to escape from the deal. He was going to do this spell to basically bind his soul into an innocent victim,
right,
where he would take that person's identity so that the devil couldn't find him.
Yeah.
So he did this whole kind of spell thing with a young soldier who was Harry Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically became Harry Angel and took on, you know, his memories and stuff they sort of merged. But then it was after that, you know, that he got hurt, and then that led to the whole...
Yeah, well, then he...
So he had amnesia.
Yeah, yeah, right? And he had to have his face rebuilt, reconstruction, and amnesia.
So then, because later on, when Harry talks...
I gotta say, for 55, nice facial reconstruction.
Yeah. Well, it's always that thing, it's like the movie... It's like movie plastic surgery, where it's like... It's always just, like, perfect. Like, it's always just, like, you can just turn people from one person to another
I
person.
I saw face off.
No signs of...
You just suck the face off the one guy and put it on the other.
But when Harry talks to the father, the rich New Orleans guy, the father of the fortune teller, he explains that, because they had originally went and got him from the hospital.
Yeah.
And...
They paid the doctor $25,000.
Paid off the doctor to fake that he was still a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And then... He talks about how they sort of let him loose in the city, like in New York, right? Into the crowd, basically. But he had, like, amnesia and stuff. So, basically, that was Harry, essentially, right? But he doesn't remember that because of the amnesia. So, as their kind of souls got combined, you know, he thinks of himself just as that.
Yeah, he only knows, I guess, because of the amnesia.
Because it's suppressed, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's only aware of...
So, one thing that I wanted to sort of mention earlier that it was like, okay, so you don't want to, you know, we'll save the spoilers.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the very first sort of person that he goes to talk to at the beginning of this case, after the initial interview with Cypher, was the doctor.
Yes.
Right? And he goes, he goes and finds out about the doctor. The doctor's like a morphine addict.
Mm-hmm.
So he withholds the doctor's morphine to as an interrogation tactic, basically, to get him to talk. And he locks him in his own house.
Yeah. He's going to go, I'm going to go get a cheeseburger. I'm going to go get a cheeseburger.
And he comes back, and you see him lock him in the house, and he comes back, and he's dead.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, they sort of play it like maybe he committed suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's
The gun is there.
But there's other signs that maybe that was set up.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of the first sort of clue that it's like, well, it was he left it locked and he came back and unlocked it.
Yeah.
So it's like, who else could have been involved, right? Because he goes right for, like, the Bible that has, like, the carved out thing where
the bullets.
With the bullets and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Because previously he'd touched the Bible because he was going through the doctor's stuff.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, found the gun and the Bible next to the gun in the drawer.
So it's
but
doing,
he didn't,
it's
like,
doing
he didn't
that,
know there were bullets in
it's
it.
It's doing
that
thing where you're always seeing it from the point of view of your main character, but the movie is leaving out certain details.
Well, he's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah. But you don't know that at the time.
No.
Until later.
That's what makes the movie
great. It leaves out certain details that when you go back, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's all sort
of... Well, it's,
there, you know.
I guess
the most
probably well-known common recent equivalent to this is Sixth Sense, as far as unreliable narrators go.
Sixth Sense, Memento,
where they leave out just enough that you don't even really know. You're not aware that stuff is being left out.
No.
You're aware of a mystery. Just
like little details.
But you don't know. Like, the leaving this stuff out is the red herring. But because it's left out, you don't know there's a red herring.
But there's enough sort of stuff that I think that, like, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody was watching this and they figured it out, like, halfway through.
Yeah. It's about.
But it also wouldn't surprise me someone watching this and they don't figure it out.
Yeah.
Until it's actually revealed.
Laura.
Like, I can see it going either way.
Yeah, Laura figured it out when he meets Louis Cipher in the church in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and he's giving him the update about what's going on, and he's starting, like, bodies are turning up. This is right after the fortune teller, Mademoiselle, whatever, ends up dead with her heart cut out.
Yeah.
He's starting to really become, like, come apart at this point.
Yeah.
And he meets, and something Louis Cipher says...
sort of triggers.
Triggered. And Laura's just like, oh. Yeah. And she just goes, he's Johnny Favorite. And then, like, in my brain, just, like, it all just collapsed. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, you're so right. Like, yeah. Everything all the holes, like, suddenly filled in.
Because they start putting in these little, like, hallucinations and things that are, like, that seem sort of like memories.
Because up until then, I just thought it was, like, the devil was, like, clean, like Robert De Niro's character was just kind of like cleaning house on this. Like, you don't have this information.
They don't make it too obvious, but they make it just enough so it's like, if you figure it out, great. If you don't, great.
Like, yeah, like either way,
they don't sort of give. So I thought what was cool was the part where he's towards the end where he's starting to realize the truth. But he's still kind of denying it to himself.
Before that,
when they talk about, you know, oh, that Johnny, the whole, it's when he's talking to the father.
Right.
Of the Margaret Crusman's father.
Yeah.
Where
that guy really was into Satan.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy, like, joyously discussed Satan.
When you get the reveal that he's, like, obviously, like, a hardcore, like, Satanist. And, which is creepy in a movie where you know that the devil is an actual person.
Yeah,
you know,
it's one
thing to be a Satanist, but it's a whole other thing to be a Satanist when you actually know Satan is a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's not just a concept.
Yeah, this guy was giddy about Satan. So, it was pretty funny.
When he's explaining about what happened when they went and got Johnny and they did the spell to change his identity and stuff and, you know, take over this young soldier's life. When he's explaining all that and Harry's, you know, it's starting to kind of dawn on him, but he's still very much in denial. And because they refer to, like, the young soldier as, like, oh, the boy, right? He's like, oh, it's just, like, some boy.
Some boy, yeah.
Because obviously at that time, he was, like, a lot younger, right?
Well, he keeps having these visions of him in whatever, some square.
It was New Year's Eve, 1943.
In the square, and it's showing the soldier from the back, and his hand keeps going to reach, and every time the face
starts to turn, but you don't see it. And when he starts, like, breaking down, he's just like, who was the boy? Who was the boy? And I was just like, wow, that's so the, like, what's in the box moment from Seven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's so that thing where, like, he's
It's like, you know the answer, but you don't want to know the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, you know exactly what it is, but you have to sort of act like you don't, because, like, your brain just can't process the horror of what's actually happening. So right after that is where, when they say, like, oh, the dog tags of the, of the soldier whose identity they took, Johnny took, were in the urn at Margaret Crusman's house.
Yeah. Which, so, they'd already previously shown him the handle,
shown,
along with a bunch
of
other weird stuff.
Exactly. But, and again, that's those things where they
as soon as they said it, I was like, I know who they are.
Yeah. Where they seed those details.
Yeah.
And so he rushes back and he finds it. And of course
it's his dog tags.
Harold Angel. Then it has the final scene of him.
That's a private detective's name, if I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like Clive Barker's detective, right? Harry Damore,
yeah.
But when... then he has his final encounter with Cipher, now fully revealed as the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where De Niro actually kicks it up a notch, and he starts to sort of...
His hair goes all long.
Well, because it's down, right?
Oh, that's right. It was up.
He
like
wears
a bun.
It up
yeah,
normally
yeah.
In like a bun on the back, and then so he's got it down, so it's going over his shoulders. But he, like, kicks it up and kind of starts to not overact really, but do more kind of the Robert De Niro, like, full on acting,
mm-hmm.
now that he's revealed, you know, so it's this contrast to throughout the rest of the movie where he had the really reserved, laid-back performance. And of course, they do the sort of yellow demon eyes thing, which
looks
I'm
really
not a
bad.
Big fan of.
It looks really...
It's cheesy.
Those bits... there's a bit there where he does it, where he points at Johnny, slash Angel, but it's like at the camera, yeah. And he holds his hand in this weird angle, yeah. And like you,
yeah.
And then his eyes.
Well, he's got the big long fingernails too, right? He's got like the sort of claw
It's got a weird focus on it, and it's the only thing that looks. It looks really cheesy.
Yeah,
versus...
it looks really cheesy, and actually, I'll get to a thing about that too because. Yeah. He does have the line, though, that is a great line. I don't know if it's a quotation or if it's taken from somewhere or if it's just a line that they wrote in the screenplay or in the book, even. But he has that great thing where he says, however carefully you sneak up on a mirror, your reflection always looks you straight in the eye.
Yeah.
So it's the whole, like, you can't be anything other than who you are,
yeah.
Right? Like, no matter, you may think, like, oh, I want to be somebody else, but you can't. Like, you are who you are, and there's no getting around it. And so when Angel... When Harry's kind of like denying the truth because he can't deal with it because it's just like so horrible, and he's saying like no, you know that's and it's like no man, like
yeah.
This is the truth,
yeah,
this is who you are, and then nothing you can do about it.
And then at that point he realizes that,
and that's where he gets into the I don't know,
yeah, and then he realizes that. Lisbon A's character
Epiphany
is
like, his daughter.
Is his daughter.
Yeah.
Which,
because they, they do establish
old
earlier.
Old boy kind of.
Yeah,
like,
and it's
way, oh, good job.
Way before old boy,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, because they do establish earlier. Because initially, Epiphany, when he first meets Epiphany, she says that she didn't know, or that she doesn't know Johnny Favorite.
Yeah, and then later she says,
but later she
yeah.
admits that in fact, Johnny Favorite was her father, that she
yeah.
was aware of the relationship
yeah.
with him and her mother.
And he runs back to
so, yeah,
where
they,
she
they
is.
They do pull an old boy, so.
Yeah, and he runs back to where she is. She's dead.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Everybody's dead.
And then, but she has a kid from some guy she didn't know.
Well, it was part of, like, the ritual thing, right?
Oh,
it was,
right.
It's basically, like, the devil's kid, essentially.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It was part of their whole, like, she
oh, was
explains.
That it?
Well, yeah, because she explains, like, it was, like, the spirit or whatever of, like, because they do, like, the rituals and stuff, and then it's, like, you know, she just ended up.
Okay, she ended up with the kid as part of the
yeah.
part of the ritual. Okay, I didn't quite piece that together.
Yeah,
and then the kid
does the
devil
eye thing,
like points
the
at it with
devil
the devil eyes.
Thing. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
And it's literally like almost the very last thing. He's one of the last things you see, and he does. He basically, you know, it's a copy of what Cypher did, and I was just like. That is bad. Like, when Robert De Niro did it, I was just like, that's not great.
Yeah.
But
the kid, it just
when they
looks...
do it with the kid, I was like, that is awful. It's like,
it's
so
and
cheesy.
And it's almost the closeout on the movie. Like,
it
the movie
is.
Almost freeze
well,
frames on
that. You basically just see where him going down the elevator, which is like the elevator to hell.
Hell, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
so
they've shown the elevator.
Flashes of that
earlier
but there's
yeah.
no context to it. But there,
well,
it's
they keep,
like...
you keep seeing this, it looks like a old lady wearing a black... like hood thing sitting in like a church pew, and he goes to touch her a number of times throughout the movie.
Yeah. Well,
and he never gets an opportunity to. And then the very end is revealed it's Robert De Niro.
Yeah, it's that same
with
thing
with no beard though. With no beard, like no Satan beard or
it's
anything.
It's that same thing like where he with the soldier, like the memory
right.
of the soldier in the
yeah.
crowd and turning around, and it's like he never gets to see it.
Yeah.
It's always that thing where it just kind of cuts short.
Yeah.
And so it's the thing of, you know, his true self sort of coming out,
mm-hmm.
but it's like the sort of conscious denial or yeah. unconscious denial of the truth that he never quite gets there until the end. And then once everything's laid bare, it's just like, well, that's that then.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, he has to accept the fact that he killed all those people. And, you know, obviously, you know, he's probably...
He's a bad guy.
He'll probably be executed for that. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
that activates, so Cypher finally gets a soul that he's supposed to be getting.
Yeah.
So that was the whole idea, was that he was basically... Yeah. Cypher was manipulating all of that.
Yeah.
So that Johnny would realize who he was. And
yeah.
Essentially...
Yeah, yeah, I guess evidently he couldn't take his soul until he realized who he was.
Well, I think that he can't...
The hard and fast rules of soul possession.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really spelled out, which is probably a good thing, because to just have, like, a bunch of exposition of, like, this is exactly how the mechanics of this work would have probably been lame.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I get the feeling that he can't sort of directly... Because you'd got to wonder, like, well, why does he need to find him in the first place? Right? Like, if he's the devil, he should be able to, like, know where
Well,
he
the
is.
Thing is he clearly knows
he does
the
know.
Situation.
He
knows what is up.
He specifically says at the end that he knew that Harry was Johnny all along.
Yeah.
So he had to manipulate this situation to essentially get Harry into a position where, A, he would realize the truth and find out who he really
was. He had
to
admit who he was.
He had to admit who he was. And he had to, like, die.
Yeah.
For his soul to be taken.
Yeah.
So he basically manipulated a situation where, you know, he was going to, you know, for like the murders that he had committed, obviously he'll be executed for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's left to your imagination, but that's fairly obvious. And
he's gonna get the chair.
By doing that. Oh, they do say it.
Yeah, okay, cool. The cop says it. Because the cop says right at the end, that's the last thing the cop says is you're going to get the chair for this.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, and I'm going to burn in hell too.
Right. Okay, good. I couldn't remember if they specifically say
And then
it.
The kid, and then the devil baby.
The devil kid.
Yeah, the devil baby.
Yeah, that was terrible. Yeah. So, okay, so they do say it. So, I mean, that's kind of what they're implying, is that he basically had to realize who he really was, and then, you know, he pays the price, and so he'll go... His soul will be belong to Cypher.
Yeah, lots of gnashing of teeth and screaming and thrashing as he's coming to realize.
Yeah. Well, things kind of go up. They definitely take it up a notch there towards the end, where once the sort of reveal kind of happens.
It is too bad about the couple of like kind of really like.
Yeah, like, but I mean that's very. I mean that's so typical.
Like, I mean
movies. Like how many movies are really solid, and then they just have some. Little thing that they're just like, oh, they just
also I feel this
couldn't resist putting in some little.
I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I don't know, you never know. Like, again, it is a very 80s thing.
But I mean,
it does feel a bit.
It is,
like,
and it's just kind of
like if this movie had, if they had said, Robert De Niro's going to be the devil, but there's going to be no weird supernatural horror stuff in this. Like, we get rid of like. We'll call him Louis Cypher, but there will never be a big reveal. There will never be, like, they play
it all
out.
I'm fine with the reveal.
Out.
I just think that we could have done it without the like,
yellow. But I mean, they'll do the reveal, but it won't be like, ha-ha, I'm the devil reveal, like, which is kind of what happens. Yeah. Like, it would have, compared how the rest of the movie has a, I guess the movie, some movies you say they have, like, not a pacing problem, but like, what is this movie supposed to be? Is this movie supposed to be funny? Is this movie
like a tonal?
Like a tonal. This movie
tonal issue
almost feels like it has tonal issues between like how like grim and dark and like how much of a horror thriller this movie is, and how much of a like kind of a detective movie, and then like some of the weird lighthearted elements, but. But it all works. Like, the tonal issues play... What could be considered tonal issues actually play into each other.
Which
leads to this movie being very originally great.
Yeah.
It's not paint by numbers.
And I think that the only thing that I probably could have really done without is, like, the really cheesy, like yellow demon eye thing, which just did not belong.
It has a bit of the, like... Just in case the audience doesn't get
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I would not have been, if they didn't put that in, I would not have been confused and been like, so is he actually the devil? Or is it just like some weird dude? It's like, he's obviously actually the devil.
Maybe they
And
were...
even if he wasn't, would it matter?
Yeah. Because there are some things about this movie that feel, that are a bit, like, especially the ending with the, and his visions and stuff are very, they're a bit arty.
Yeah.
Maybe they felt without the cheesy
well,
stuff
I think
that came
that's,
off too arty, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a bit sort of the director, direction stuff, because Alan Parker's kind of...
He's got that.
He kind of does that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at... I mean, what I'm most familiar with, as I said, was the Pink Floyd The Wall movie, and I mean, that's all art, because there's no, like...
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conventional movie, obviously. So it's you know, that movie is basically like a movie set to, you know, an album... Essentially,
yeah.
So it's all art. So that's kind of, you know, what he does. So that was cool, but I just, the Demon Eye thing was, like, the only thing where I felt they really kind of crossed the line.
But you didn't know
I really didn't need that. The movie didn't need it. I didn't need to see it as an audience member. It was perfect without
but
that.
But in no way does it, like, wreck this movie. This
doesn't
movie,
wreck it. It's just unfortunate.
Is really good.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it.
Good. Well, especially because you hadn't seen it before. Like, yeah. That's good.
Sort of about an hour into the, half hour, maybe 45 minutes into the movie, I was kind of like, I don't know where they're going, and I don't know how I feel about this, but it very quickly turned around. Like, about the time he got to New Orleans, I was like, I went from being, I like what I see, but I'm not sure where this is going, to being, like, fully invested. Like, I want to know, like, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just really good. I highly recommend this movie.
I'm a big fan of it. It's one of the few things that sort of in my collection that's just kind of has no sort of connection to anything else. Like, it has no special reason why it's there other than just I really like it.
Yeah.
Like, most things in my collection, it's like, oh, because, you know, an actor or actress is, like, one of my favorites, or the director is one of my favorite directors, or it's part of a series, like, you know, like a lot of the superhero movies or things like that.
Yeah.
But this is, like, one of the few that's just there just because it's, like, a good movie that I really like.
I mean, this is in some ways probably worse than the Glowing Eyes thing, is the sort of the worst thing about this movie is the title. And because I think the title prevents it from a movie that people are going to watch. Because it doesn't say anything about the movie. It's something you can quickly, in a list of movies, you will scan by it and it won't stop you. Won't go, what's that about?
I think that's more of a problem now. Like, I think when it came out, because
it's a new movie. A very 80s title. Yeah.
Well, and it's a new movie, right? Yeah, so when it came out, I'm sure people were just like, oh, that
it's
new
Mickey
Angel
Rourke. Yeah,
that new Mickey Rourke movie. Let's go see that movie. I'm sure it wasn't an issue at all at the time, but now all this time later, it's kind of just lost in the shuffle of, because it was not like it's not like a cult film. Like, it was well known.
No,
You know, and it got,
I've heard it brought up many times.
You know, awards, or like nominated for some awards or something. Like, it was not it was not like a terribly underrated movie. Like, it's always been fairly highly rated.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think at this point, all this time later, it's been kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. So, I mean, I agree with that to a certain degree, but like I was saying before, I mean, the book that it's based on is called Falling Angel, which is even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, like,
I mean,
such a
generic, I feel like book
such
titles,
a generic title. That,
book titles, you can get away with a lot of stuff, because often when you look at a book title, you also get, you usually have a cover or something to go with it.
I think the Angel...
I don't know what the cover of this movie looks like.
I think
I don't
the
know.
Angel Heart...
I need to see a movie poster.
I think the Angel Heart title, I mean, I sort of like it because it's very, like, meaningful to the story. Mm. I mean, like, the heart and stuff is, like, a theme, you know, because
it is,
like,
very much.
You know, there's characters have, you know, he, some
also,
of the people he killed.
His name is Angel.
Well, yeah, that
is a bit of a bonk on the head. Like, look, it's the devil. This is the angel.
In a way. Although they sort of subvert it by the fact that
it turns out he's not.
It has really nothing to do with the fact. It's just a very noirish kind of name to give a character.
Yeah.
His
name's Angel, and the main villain is villain in this movie is. You know, the devil, of course his name is Angel. What else would it be? Like, it's,
well,
like,
yeah.
But, like, in a good way. Like, not, like,
yeah,
like
I,
well,
I
we're going to give an
like,
angel to show it, like, no, because it's a noir kind of setting.
I mean,
and that's...
The only reason that you might sort of, because it's not like they're sort of diametrically opposed. I mean, it's not like a thing where it's, like, the struggle of, like, an angel versus the devil. It's not, like, a thing like that at all. And he's certainly not, like, good. But maybe it's meant to refer to, like, the fact that the actual Harry Angel was, like...
That's what I mean,
was
yeah.
an innocent victim.
Right.
You know, in the original sort of thing, like, the real Harry Angel that was replaced. You know, so maybe it's referring to that. But, honestly, I think it was really just...
It's a style choice.
Yeah, it's just a very noirish...
It's good.
It's a very noirish kind of name to give a character. And, you know, it makes for being able to make, like, a pun kind of title, like,
yeah, sure.
Falling Angel is the book. But I think that the movie title is better because the whole sort of heart theme, because it's, like, Johnny Favorite, you know, part of the spell of taking over Harry Angel's identity was, like, he eats his heart.
Right.
To, like, which is a very classic kind of mythological thing, you know, like, you eat the heart of your enemy, you take his soul within you, and yeah. gain his power.
And then later they cut the fortune teller's heart and out.
They cut her heart out and stuff. When he kills her, he cut her heart out. And all that. And they have, you know, a number of... There's, like, a lot of heart... sort of imagery and, like, heartbeat sounds and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a theme. So I think that that was definitely... It's a good title in terms of its relation to the movie. It's just maybe not distinct enough.
Yeah.
That it kind of gets lost.
I think that's.
But I mean, what else would?
It's not the worst thing about the movie. I didn't mean it in a bad way. I meant it more like it's a shame that because of the title, the movie will probably get overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, just by people looking.
But again, like I say, I think that's more of a problem now.
Yeah,
there's been, like, you know, thousands more movies released.
Hey, at least it starts with an A, so it's early on in the list.
Yeah.
You'll people are lazy. They'll just watch.
That's right. Yeah. It's going through the list.
Going through the list there. Yeah.
All right, well, but, that's good.
Yeah, nope, so that's...
All right, so we can... Spoilers can be off here.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the end of that. So,
welcome back!
Welcome back.
How was the movie? Did you like it? Yeah, we did.
we did. Well, I always have.
Yeah,
So, yeah, any parting thoughts?
No, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. That's... If you like noir movies, go watch it.
Yeah.
You like 80s movies with Richie Mork... God damn it. I can't say his name.
Mickey Rourke?
Go watch
it. Rourke is actually kind of hard to say.
Rourke. It's the Rourke.
It's those R's. Yeah. Rourke.
And Rourke. Yeah. No, go watch it. You want to see Robert De Niro play the devil? Go watch it. Like, yeah. No, it's just good. It's just really good.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it.
So, that's this week.
Yep.
Next week... It's our fifth episode next week.
Yep.
So we're thinking of doing maybe a top five of sorts. We'll...
Yeah, top five.
We'll
top five what?
Yeah, top five. We'll come up with something. We'll... I don't know, probably throw it on the Twitter or maybe even ask on Facebook if people want to hear a top five of a particular top five.
Yeah.
I know we're both looking forward to... We want to see Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the theaters right now, for those listening to this at a date far in the future.
Yeah,
if it's Ant-Man, like... When Ant-Man 3 has come out.
If it's like 2057.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like...
Ant-Man 24 has come out.
And you're like... It's like post-apocalyptic times, and you're listening to this on, like, you know, an old reel-to-reel...
Your phonograph.
Tape deck that you found in, like, a basement bunker.
Yeah,
that's been saved. Then, Ant-Man is just coming out.
Ant-Man, yeah. So we're probably going to see that. So I guess we'll put that seems like a good one we can talk about in a later cast too. Maybe the episode after.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So where can people find us?
Okay. So our podcast stream is on SoundCloud. So www.soundcloud.com/whatwevewatchedpodcast. Just, you know, no spaces or anything, obviously. And then the Twitter for the podcast is at What We've Watched. You can email to www.podcast@shaw.ca. That's mainly it. We are working on getting the podcast onto iTunes right now, so hopefully that will happen fairly soon.
Make it easier for everyone with devices to listen, which is like everybody's.
And it's just easier to find.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, that's what they use to get... to podcasts and stuff like that. So, we'll definitely post an update on that and let everybody know when that goes live.
Yeah. All right. See you guys next week.
Yep. Enjoy.
Are you a Mouseketeer? Because it's Wednesday. It's Anything Can Happen Day.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. I love that.
That was amazing.